Welcome to the ASHP Official Podcast, your guide to issues related to medication use, public health, and the profession of pharmacy.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Research in Pharmacy Practice. This series focuses on discussions for all things related to research, including fundamentals, best practices, and practical advice for all those interested in contributing to the advancement of practice and research. We've entitled this podcast to be Improvement Science and Implementation Science, Driving What We Learn into Practice. My name is James Hoffman. I'm the Senior Vice President of Quality and Safety at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and I'm also a faculty member in our Department of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Science. I'm really happy to have with me today Fran Cunningham, who is the Associate Chief Consultant, PBM, and Director of the VA Center for Medication Safety within the Department of Veterans Affairs, and Lainey Jones. She's Associate Professor in the Department of Genomic Health at Geisinger, and she's going to talk about implementation science. Fran's going to talk about improvement science, and we're all going to see how these things mix together at times and can all be, as the title says, used for driving what we learn into practice. Come from a little bit different angles, but all I think moves forward and can really turn into the ways we learn and publish. So welcome again, and thanks for joining us today. Our first question is right to the point of the title of putting improvement science and implementation science. So let's just start there. Talk about the origins of the two fields and how they apply to your practice, and just, you know, tell us a little bit about your background and how you fit with these. So let's start with Fran.
Well, thank you, James. Looking at improvement science, I would have to say improvement science is, as we all know, is newer. And it's a science that really encompasses the aspects of research to evaluate or investigate, and I hate to do this, improvement strategies, often focused in the area of healthcare. And if you think about how it's utilized, it's often utilized by identifying a given problem, defining that problem, and then developing tools to assess. And it really grew out of the era with the Institute of Medicine report. And so that's why I can say it's somewhat newer, so to speak. And it really took the challenges that were brought up in that report. From my standpoint, looking at improvement of healthcare quality and safety and how best to evaluate it and assess it, and in long term, take whatever information that was gleaned and apply it to your given healthcare system. So how did I end up in this area? I would probably say right place, right time, dating myself, because it was as our center was being developed, it was at the time in which the Institute of Medicine was really the report had come out, and one was trying to figure out how best to improve the safe and appropriate use of medications. And at that point in time, our center was being developed. And so it was realizing that we had everything at our fingertips, the data to assess how we can take this information, synthesize it, evaluate it, and then roll it into practice in pretty rapid time to improve the safe and appropriate use of medications and vaccines in veterans. So that's pretty much how I came into being. We have a few areas that we focus on that really kind of focus, you know, that we think of from an improvement science: surveillance, applied quality improvement projects, medication use evaluations, all of which fall under our umbrella to address improvement science.
Excellent. Let's turn to Lainey now. And Lainey, tell us a little bit of your background. And I know you come from more of the implementation science lens.
Yeah, thanks, James. And thanks for that discussion, Fran, about improvement science. And I'll just dive into a little bit about the definition of implementation science. And I also consider it to be a newer science, even though it probably just has been around for a long time, but wasn't really had some sort of formal name around it but people have been really kind of doing the methods and the skills of implementation science for many years, but we've kind of all come together, I would say, in the last decade to kind of formalize our language around this science and kind of putting together different kind of policies and procedures, I'd say, to make it kind of synergistic so everyone is talking that same language when we talk about implementation science. So I said all that, but didn't say what it is. So let's dive into that. So implementation science was really born in this vein that we really needed to expedite the translation of what we know that works and what is evidence-based and actually implement that into practice. And there's been a few reports where it takes, you know, 20 years from, you know, guideline development or a new medication to be approved for it actually to be used within the healthcare setting and kind of universally by individuals. And our real goal is how do we shorten that time from these evidence-based practices, interventions, models to get care to the patients that need it in the most rapid kind of fashion and as quickly as we can to improve their health. In saying that, implementation science uses theories, models, and frameworks from many different sciences. And that's kind of why I say, you know, it never really had this formal name, but we kind of begged and borrowed from everyone else to use this kind of theory-driven approach to ground our science in something that has that rigor and kind of evidence-based evaluation of what we're doing. So we've taken ideas from improvement science, quality improvement, health behavior, just to name a few, to kind of create this newer science and kind of field. And, you know, we're not really only interested in did we achieve that health outcome in those individuals, but how did we make that happen? So who adopted it, who didn't adopt it, how many patients were we able to reach? Was that who we really wanted to reach? And is that representative of that population who we wanted to actually receive this intervention or not? So I got involved in this probably almost in the same way, friend, and I was in the right place at the right time. And I had finished my postdoc at Geisinger in Health Services and Outcomes Research, had met an implementation scientist there at Geisinger and one of my mentors, Dr. Alana Rahm, who had been doing this work in cancer and genomics for many years. And I became, you know, very interested and kind of drank the Kool-Aid on the science that we really needed to figure out in my area of research that happened to be preventative cardiology, really focused on inherited lipid disorders, is that we've had drugs such as statins for many, many years, but it's very difficult to get our patients to take these and adhere to them over time. So what really were those kind of barriers and facilitators to getting individuals to receive the best care for their cholesterol disorder? So currently have a few grants funded by both government and industry focused on using implementation science to address this kind of high cholesterol problem, and mainly working kind of now in that identification space of making sure that we're able to identify all those individuals with these high cholesterol disorders so that we can better treat them in the future.
That's great. Great summary, and great to know how you've been connected with it, Lainey. You know, Fran had said about the Institute of Medicine report, which I think was probably, what, 2000, 2001. And Lainey, you said how, you know, a lot of the fundamental concepts existed for a long time with implementation science, and it's sort of come together more recently as a term. Is there sort of a seminal report or committee or time when it started to really gel as a field?
James, I'm not sure that there's like one certain point in time. There's been a lot of work that's been done by what some of us refer to as the grandparents of implementation science, and their work kind of highlights like intros to the field in many different kind of areas. I know there's a paper of implementation science in epidemiology, implementation science in cardiovascular disease, and kind of what does this mean? But I think also right now is a critical time for implementation science as kind of governmental agencies are really putting a lot of dollars behind this kind of understanding this translational crux and where we're at and how we might expedite it in the future, that I think we'll only see this term kind of more often as more kind of funding and projects focus on this area.
Great, that's helpful. Let's go a bit into the jargon and the terms, and maybe a starting point is, I think with both, you're trying to achieve some change, some difference, some improvement, but the terms and the exact methods can be a bit different. So Fran, what do you what do you think are some of the key kind of techniques, things that sort of differentiate and are kind of essential to doing improvement science right?
Great question, James. And I would have to kind of echo Lainey in that a lot of the methods are adopted from standard research, and it's just applied to the work that you're doing. And in these instances, it's applied to, for us, it's applied to improving the safe and appropriate use of medications and in a timely fashion. I think that's one of the things I left out. It's not that, when you look at a lot of standard research protocols or what we would call, standard research, it takes a while. And with the improvement science, what we're really trying to do is identify a problem, design a project around that problem, and analyze the data so that we can have certain results that we can then move and address accordingly. So a typical, from my standpoint, it can be one of two ways. I'm going to give you an example of a surveillance. And so a lot of our surveillance, we're looking at the safe and appropriate use of medication. So we're looking at safety and how the medication is being used in our patient population, our various patient populations. And we may use a typical pharmacoepidemiologic design, I really wanted to emphasize in our center that our projects should be designed with the rigor of a standard research protocol. And so we do. We use typical pharmacoepidemiologic design. It can be very detailed, or it can be very simple, depending on what we're looking at. And we will use standard statistical methods to ensure that what we're assessing, we're assessing the correct way. And so when we're looking at, how we are identifying or what type of methods we're using, that's how we built our program, so to speak. And then the big thing is, what do you do with the results? Well, with us, it's how are we planning to use the results? Well, we're always interested in our own healthcare system. I'm not designing this project for generalizable knowledge. I'm not designing this project to have it reproducible at this point outside. We are really designing to ensure that whatever information we use, or we identify results, we can use to improve patient care, to improve our healthcare system. So we take our results and we will reach out to an implementation scientist and get the best information from them as to how to implement those results. How do we implement these outcomes so that we can improve or change our healthcare system? And so we use a lot of standard methods that have been around for a long time, nothing new, to identify certain outcomes and then move forward with implementing change.
Great. One thing to follow up a bit that I heard you say is the direct applicability to your health system, in your case, the VA. And I do think that is a driving point with improvement science that you're working to improve something in your usually local environment. Sometimes maybe it's multi-site. With the VA, it's certainly multi-site, right? You have
right.
Hundreds of, care settings. But it's fundamentally motivated to understand, improve, and maybe even iterate improvements and cycles of improvements for that local environment. And it's less about, you know, generalizable knowledge. And I think we'll get to it that, you know, individual health system focus doesn't mean there's nothing to learn for sort of the wider world. And we'll talk about that more, but the general motivation isn't directly generalizable knowledge. It's to understand, iterate, improve, you know, make things better in a structured, rigorous way.
Correct. Correct. I couldn't say it any better, James.
So keeping on this kind of, you know, what's the jargon? What are the core principles? Lainey, tell us a little bit more about implementation science and maybe some of the similarities, differences, and how you've used it.
Yeah, thanks, James. And thanks, Fran, for that great description. And I think I'll kind of talk about how we also use very traditional methods, but I think the way we kind of set up our research projects and use implementation science might be a little different. And just one thing to mention too that I didn't mention before is that implementation science isn't really specific to the healthcare context, right? It can be used in kind of any environment. And I know friends of mine that do work in you know, more public health sectors related and not related to healthcare. So it's really kind of this universal science that can be uptaken in multiple different contexts. And what you really need to have are a few basic components. And you need to decide what is that evidence-based intervention or program that you want to implement. I know when I was first going through this, what is evidence-based is a question that comes up a lot. And, you know, from my mentors and leaders in the field it depends on what you think is the most evidence-based intervention, right? So there's no one right answer to that. And you have to decide with you and your teams about what you think is that kind of evidence that you want to implement. And then the second part is, you know, taking that evidence base and figuring out how you're going to implement it within your context. So most of my work is in healthcare, so I'll talk directly about that. But so how do we want to implement, for example, guidelines as an evidence-based intervention into practice? And this is, you know, what we tend to call in implementation science our implementation strategies, and kind of, you know, butt heads with other fields and kind of this jargon is that, you know, sometimes our implementation strategies to a statistician or other health researchers tend to be what they would consider the intervention. But to us, that's not what we're directly measuring. We're measuring, you know, how do we get that in? And, you know, we're not always powered to measure, is there a difference between these implementation strategies? We just want to know what works and what doesn't. And it might work differently in certain patient populations or healthcare settings, and trying to figure out, you know, what might be better versus not, and how do we move from there? And then we use those theories, models, and frameworks to kind of guide what we want to do and help us to measure the different outcomes. So a lot of outcomes that we tend to look at are adoption. So who actually uptook the intervention, acceptability. So this tends to lead to satisfaction in a lot of other places. So did people like it? Did they hate it? You know, what did they think about the intervention? Was it appropriate within this context? Were we implementing something, you know, to, you know, a group of individuals that doesn't have internet access, but our intervention required that you had internet access? So, and then also, what is that cost of the implementation effort? So how much did it cost us to build and then implement within these settings and then also maintain over time? And, you know, there's a whole kind of growing part of implementation science that's about designing for dissemination and, you know, making sure that once we design something that it stays even after the dollars that we've spent to build that strategy kind of stay within our healthcare system. And I think one main difference I'd point out, James and Fran, from implementation science to improvement science is that we're really designing for, you know, generalizability. Like we want these strategies to be implemented somewhere else, whether you have to adopt or change them, that's important information, and that only grows the field. And reporting on those in a way that we're able to share with other researchers and other healthcare leaders is important, because then they know what to adopt and change within their kind of context as we move forward.
That's really helpful. That's a, it's a good thing to point out there. Lainey, how, following up on that a little bit and maybe focusing just on implementation science, if someone is newer to this, or wants to increase the rigor of their work, where would you tell them to start? Are there a few, you know, specific things to incorporate? What's the starting point?
Yeah, so I think the starting point is kind of twofold. First, it's to figure out what your evidence-based intervention is, and then deciding on, you know, how you might want to implement that. So there's kind of two main compilations that have been developed. One is called EPOC and one is called ERIC, and I'm not going to be able to define those for you, but if you search them, they will come up. And they basically give you a list of different implementation strategies that kind of exist, and the most kind of evidence-based ones. They're not fully comprehensive, but they're a pretty good start of, you know, say you figure out your evidence-based intervention and then you want to do an educational outreach, or you want to change the way that individuals are paid for these services, that'll kind of detail out what those initial strategies are that you can select from. Then the next thing is to figure out what is your kind of theory or model that is guiding your work. So there's also a few papers and websites, both on the National Institutes of Health and others from their work, that say, here are the models that exist today. Let's not create any new models. Let's use these existing models and kind of figure out how you're going to either plan your intervention or how you're going to measure your intervention. And that's really where to start as you kind of think about implementation science.
Great. Fran, from the improvement science lens, you've mentioned that sort of pharmacoepi methods and other sort of research methods can be applied. What else would you say is kind of a crucial starting point to do improvement science in a rigorous way?
Of course, I'm trying to. Okay. I would say identifying your initial problem, because you're looking at an issue that you are trying to improve. And so I would say one of the pillars or the foundation for development is to identify that problem.
I like that. The problem statement approach that I think is often used with improvement is, that's one of my favorite starting points. So I'm right there with you.
It is. And then designing an approach that will allow you to adequately evaluate the problem and design a method that will allow for improvement. And so it's, you know, it's a stepwise approach. I could give you the 8 steps. I'm not going to sit here and give you the 8 steps. But the key is really to identify the problem and to design method that will allow you to assess, evaluate the problem, and then when you identify the results, be able to address those results, implement, and assess change. And that's how you kind of get to that entire process or that goal of improvement.
And that rapid iteration and cycling, I think is so key.
The iterative process is paramount. You know, the iterative process, you know, if I'm looking at it from the surveillance standpoint, from the iterative statistical design, if I'm looking at it from a medication use evaluation, it is assessing in different sites and looking at the iterative process to improve outcomes for that given evaluation that we're doing for the medication use evaluation. So right. Iterative process is paramount.
Right, right. So part of what we wanted to be sure to cover is this, the learning that can come from both approaches, and You know, the sharing of results to so you know, what is learned is not left in you know, one project or one health system. So a big part of that, of course, is publication. So why don't we go back to Lainey? What does publication or even wider dissemination look like in implementation science?
Yeah, and that's a really loaded question, James, right? Because,
sure,
you know, it can always look different. And there's, you know, implementation science kind of mirrors, and you might hear it a lot, called DNI, so dissemination and implementation, right? So the implementation piece is about how do we actually implement it, where the whole other science of this is how do we then disseminate those results to the most crucial people, right? So, you know,
that goes back to your point of you're trying to kind of do the initial project, but also learn how to scale as part of that initial project, right?
Yep. Yep. So a lot of times in implementation science, right, it's not just this researcher off on their own doing this work. You have collaborators. They could be, you know, people within your own kind of pharmacy group, or they could be outside of your organization. They could be different organizations or foundations. So part of that dissemination is actually sharing with them in ways that they will understand kind of what you found and, you know, what might work and what might not work. And then also communicating that with your patients and also the individuals that were a part of your study, you know, what happened and what didn't, to make sure that they understand the implications, because they might continue to do this, right? If we find that something was very successful and people want to know that they did a great job, and, you know, what are the next steps and how might, you know, should they even continue to do this once, you know, these people are gone that are telling me to do this. And then we also do the traditional, you know, publication and in peer-reviewed journals and presentations at meetings. And a lot of that is to really, you know, say what we've done, but then also how can others kind of adapt those approaches in the future to their own work, and in, you know, what might work within our context here in U.S. healthcare versus worldwide in different settings. So that allows people to be able to read that and kind of discuss that as well. So
switching to improvement work, Fran, let's talk about the publication and dissemination project or process. And I think a starting point is back to that, you know, usually more local fix a problem standpoint. So someone could easily say, "Oh, well, why are you going to publish that? That's just one local place." But you know, let's talk about how, you know, it's really getting established that improvement projects can and should be published, and that there is a lot to learn from even a local project, even projects that aren't at the scale of the VA.
Now, you're exactly right. There's a lot that can be learned. Ours is a national program, so we're often looking at multi-site projects that we're publishing. However, what you said is you're spot on. And as you know, there's a specific way, and their guidelines, the Squire guidelines,
exactly,
that pretty much dictate how to share that information. And that guideline, for those that may not know or I'm not aware, is really to share the information that allows one to assess the improvement, safety, and value of a given healthcare area. And it is often related to your given healthcare system. So there's guidelines on how to share that information.
Yeah, and I've used these guidelines, and I think that it's written from the lens of how to write the paper, what to report, but it really turns into a nice checklist that you're doing it right in the first place, because if you're going to report it properly, you have to do it properly. So you know, there's this, I think if one wants to do this in a rigorous way, thinking about those Squire guidelines, thinking about potential publication right from the start, even if it doesn't pan out, can really make for a rigorous project.
Oh, it does. Oh, it does. It definitely does. And we kind of live by that with certain projects. Others, you know, they're, like I said earlier, they're designed just based by certain methodologies,
right?
But when we're looking at other projects, the Squire guideline becomes paramount.
And my thinking a lot of times along these lines is, you know, I think it's getting more and more established that IRBs are sort of the point of record of, are you doing research or QI?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, if you have some thought to publish it, take it through your IRB, get that QI determination. Journals expect that, you know, more and more. And so you've just done that from the start, and that'll facilitate the publication.
Absolutely. And that's what we typically do. We have a checklist, an internal checklist that we, and we, you know, defines QI versus research, and QI still allows for publication. And so we get that determined on the front end. And that is something that I would advise anybody that is interested in moving forward in this area to do, you know, make sure that you assess to determine on the front end, you know, what direction you're taking.
So we just have a few minutes left. Lainey, Fran, I think this has been a great discussion. Is there something that maybe we missed that you want to be sure to add that our listeners can take away?
I'll go. And I think I'm going to reiterate what Lainey said earlier, in that from an improvement science standpoint, people have been doing this, or they are doing it, and they haven't put a label to it.
Right.
And so hopefully, as you know, people learn more about this, or healthcare providers or investigators want to do more, they kind of delve into this, understanding what we're talking about here, that there should be rigor put behind it, and that they're already doing it.
Right.
And it's an area that will continue to grow from an improvement science standpoint, with real world data available. And real-world evidence needed in a timely fashion. This area will only grow more and more over the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just wanted to add to any of our like pharmacy learners out there too, you know, Fran and I talked about, you know, kind of set up centers for this kind of science, but it likely exists within any setting that you're going to now in healthcare. And to Fran's point, what they call it, who knows, right? But I think, you know, some ideas to look for would be someone who's doing quality improvement, or they might even call it improvement science within your healthcare. Or I've also seen public health pharmacists within certain centers that are doing this, or your institution might have a research enterprise. So if any of those exist and this really interests you, those are great ways to kind of reach out to someone to get involved and kind of talk to them and learn more about what they're doing. And some of these concepts might resonate and hit what you want to do within your own project, and you might be able to learn from them or partner with them on any of the projects that you need to do for your work, and whether it be residency or fellowship or even a student project in the future.
That's a great point, Lainey. And I do think there is this wave of more rigor and more publication that's coming forward. And so if learners kind of connect with that, they're going to be doing higher quality work that is more publishable. It ultimately, I think, helps more patients because it's done better as well. So it's not just a ego, get your thing published. It's, I think, more rigor, better work, you know, does help improve or implement better. So that's all the time we have. I want to thank both Fran Cunningham and Lainey Jones for joining us today to discuss implementation science, quality improvement, and improvement science. And hopefully you were able to keep up when we said improvement versus implementation, and you caught a bit of the differences, but also the driving point of both to change and improve healthcare. If you haven't already, I encourage you to check out the research resources offered by ASHP and the ASHP Foundation. The ASHP Foundation offers research grant and award opportunities. If you've enjoyed today's episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe to the ASHP official podcast, and that'll give you more content from ASHP. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for listening to ASHP Official, the voice of pharmacists advancing healthcare. Be sure to visit ashp.org/podcast to discover more great episodes, access show notes, and download the episode transcript. If you loved the episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe, rate, or leave a review. Join us next time on ASHP official.